You're listening to Soul Survivors, ESL Teaching and Expat Life in Seoul, Korea.
Podcasting from an undisclosed Starbucks somewhere in Seoul, it's Seoul Survivors, your weekly source on teaching ESL and living in Seoul. I'm your host, Carl, and with me today is my co-host, John.
Hello.
Hi, John.
How are you?
Sarah's not with us today. I had a co-worker wedding, so we're recording the podcast a little bit late. Usually we recorded like about 5 p.m., and so it's like 6:30 now. And that kind of imposed a bit on Sarah. She'd have to come all the way up from Bundang and then wouldn't be getting home till late. So, but John and I, we live pretty close together, so it's much easier for us. And are you kind of a night person, John?
I'm very much a night person.
Now, okay. What time do you go to bed at night?
Technically, it's morning when I'm going to bed.
Geez.
3, 4.
Really?
On a regular basis.
Oh, man.
With the shift I'm on now, yeah. Regularly, 3 or 4. Yeah, sometimes 5 or 6.
I go to bed about... Usually I like to sort of get in bed about 11:30, and then I'm usually asleep by about 12:30. So, yeah. Even though I work at night, too. You know, my whole philosophy is, what's there to do after work? If you get out of work even at 9 p.m., 10 p.m., 11 p.m., how do you live your life, you know?
Right.
Yeah. We're not really drinkers either, I
guess. No.
Yeah.
So I either play silly computer games or I write.
Oh, and you've given up the smoking, so you don't have that anymore.
No, it's been very difficult to figure out what you people do when you're not smoking.
Yeah,
but I'm getting there.
How are you adapting? Are the children bothering you?
No, I took advantage of the 9 days off at Chuseok to quit smoking so that I wouldn't be around children's necks during the very worst part of it.
It's very clever.
It worked out.
Yeah.
It worked out well.
Yeah, I guess we should mention, too, that you haven't heard John's voice in a while, and we just finished up the big Chuseok holiday. It was kind of unusually long, because not only did we have the 3-day Chuseok holiday, but then Tuesday was a holiday called, roughly, National Foundation Day. And the Korean is Gaechanjeol, which... if you do kind of a straight translation, gay is dog, chun is 1,000, and jol is temple. So it's the holiday, the temple of 1,000 dogs.
Okay.
Yeah, which I think was a Dungeons & Dragons module.
I played it.
Yeah, like T14 or something.
Right.
But again, it also comes from the Chinese, but if you use the Chinese version of Gaechanjeol, then it kind of means sky opening day or something like that.
So which is it?
Oh, it's actually sky opening.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Not Temple of 1,000 Dogs, but
good.
It's always fun to sort of tell your students that. Wish them a happy Temple of 1,000 Dogs, and they're
right.
they're like, "What, teacher?" And then you write the Korean on the board, and because they've seen that term a billion times, and it just resolves to them as sky opening day.
Right.
And you sort of point out that it has another reading to a stupid foreigner. They find that hilarious. So it was a Tuesday, so a lot of places just sort of shut down for the whole week, which is nice, because Koreans work awfully, awfully hard, and it's really nice to see them just relax.
Chilling, right.
Yeah. They used to work 6 days a week, but lately they've introduced a 5-day work week. They're sort of graduating it in. It started off with big companies like Samsung, LG, which I guess in North America we call Gold Star.
LG is Gold Star?
Yeah, LG, okay. LG is Gold Star.
Okay.
Yeah. So it used to be 6 days a week, and then the big companies then legally had to make it 5 days a week, and then every year I think it's smaller and smaller companies. So in a couple more years, that's pretty much going to be...
Everyone's going to be on a 5-day work week.
Theoretically.
Right.
Yeah. There are laws and then there are laws, right?
Right. So. There's laws and then there are how they are observed.
Absolutely, right. Yeah, I know, I mean, I think, I swear my school probably has the correct number of employees for a 5-day work week, but they work 6 days a week.
Huh.
Yeah, which I think is, that's probably going to be a bit of our main topic, our lives versus the lives of the actual Korean teachers and how to keep them from hating your guts. But yeah.
It's important.
But I think we should, we're also going to do our snack of the week.
Right.
Okay, we got a little bag here. And,
reach
in there, John. It's a little scrunched up. There might be two there. Sorry, if I could have one.
Alrighty.
Thank you. All right, so, okay. Go ahead. It should be a kind of a cinnamon taste.
Flatty kind of.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh. It's like a pancake.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's called a hoduk.
Hoduk.
Hoduk, yeah. Duck, meaning rice cake.
Okay.
And ho, meaning like counting unit for your room number or something. 302, ho. I don't know. So counting room number cake.
Counting room number cake.
I'm sure the ho actually means something else, but.
For now,
yeah,
we will count our rooms.
Yeah. But usually it's like very simple Korean words end up having about 5 different definitions. And no matter which one you think it is, you always find out it's the wrong one. So,
which is part of the fun.
Absolutely, right. Yeah. Like I was saying, gay chun jol. Gay, I would know as dog, and chun as a Korean word for 1,000, but right. Apparently, if read in a different context, it means sky opening day. Yeah.
Okay.
Which is kind of like, it's like one of the many Korean Independence Days. You know, in Canada and America, we have, you know, well, America has July 4.
Right.
Canada, we have July 1st, Canada Day. And we kind of just,
that's it. Yeah. We blow our whole wad on that day, right?
In Korea, it seems they break it out into actual 4 days. It's like, yay, we're independent. Yay, we're independent. Yay, we're independent. Yay, we're independent.
Well, they really appreciate their independence.
Absolutely, right. Yeah. Well, I mean, consider how many times they've been invaded and stuff like
right.
that. It's, you know, yeah, you,
right.
You can see the
uh-huh.
emphasis on... Yeah, so there's the sky opening day, which is kind of... it's more... It's almost like what America has with, like, you know, the pilgrims. You know, a lot of legend. It's
okay.
Sort of a lot of myth-making. So this is sort of as if, like, this great sky...
Oh, my God, the pilgrims were a myth?
More or less.
Yeah.
But, not, but you know, the
I
whole...
I mean, they were here, but...
Yeah, the whole story we're used to from, you know, the Thanksgiving Day cartoons
right.
and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Largely myth. But, yeah, so...
And my favorite thing about... To digress, my favorite... What he's saying about the pilgrims was that they... They left England because they ran out of people to persecute.
The pilgrims? Or
yeah.
The, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Koreans, they have the Gaechanjeol, which is about the sky god sort of founding Korea. And then they have sort of a constitution day, so the establishment of the constitution. And then they have, you know, the Japanese were nuked day. Basically, the
oh my God! What?
Well, you know the VJ Day, the
oh, okay.
Victory Over Japan Day.
Okay.
The Japanese were nuked today.
Okay.
And then they have
Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead Day, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And they have like Sam Il. It's a May 3rd. No, March. Sorry, March 3rd. Is it May 3rd? One of those days, sort of the Korean Independence Movement Day, which sort of kicked off during the Japanese colonial period. It wasn't particularly successful because a lot of people died and stuff like that, but it was kind of the foundation of the sort of the Korean Independence Movement. But I guess what's in Mexico, they have... what's that big celebration in Mexico to drink?
Cinco de Mayo?
Yeah, Cinco de Mayo.
Right.
Kind of like that. Sort of, well, not
really. We didn't really win that battle.
Yeah,
but
something important kind of happened, and we can drink.
Right.
Yeah.
We'll do it. Yeah, Greece has no day, which is the day their prime minister said no to Mussolini.
Oh, no as in adjective.
As in no. As in no.
Oh, as in the absence
and
of any kind of important day.
Subsequently, they ended up, you know, being invaded by Nazi Germany and all of that, but but it was one of their pride days. A very prideful.
What about that? What about the Elgin Marbles? Do they have a black day for that?
Not that I'm aware of. They have a couple of black days. May 29th, I believe May 29th is the day Constantinople fell. Constantinople/Istanbul, which they still call Constantinople.
But that's not in Greece.
No, but it was the head of the what effectively was the Greek Empire by that point, Byzantine Empire.
Oh.
So they still call that a very black day. In fact, I think it happened on a Tuesday, and Tuesday is still a bad luck day to get everything, to do anything. You don't get married on Tuesday. Mm. You just don't do anything on Tuesday.
Ah, interesting. Yeah.
Anyway, that's Greece, not Korea.
All right. Yeah. I sort of strayed from the topic.
Right. Now, hotuk, it comes in kind of two forms. There's sort of the kind I bought, which is sort of straight from the street vendor.
All right.
And then there's sort of grocery store hotuk, which kind of comes in a kind of a bread bag. And I guess our listeners couldn't really see, but you intimated it's like pancake. It's kind of like a very thick pancake,
right.
And round, thick. And so when I went to the grocery store, I saw hotuk, but I didn't know at that time it was hotuk. And the closest thing it resembled to me were English muffins, especially the grocery store kind. It's same size as English muffins, a little bit thinner than English muffins, but as I was kind of saying in the last podcast, I made this mistake that, you know, persimmons I thought were Asian tomatoes. Have you had persimmons before?
Persimmons, yeah.
Okay, yeah, not a Canadian thing. So I thought they were tomatoes, Asian tomatoes.
No.
Yeah. But hotuk, I just thought, oh, this is like Asian English muffins. So I bought a package, and I took them home, and then I took out my knife and sliced it in half, like you would cut an English muffin,
instead of
down the... You know, the circumference wise, not sort of the diameter wise. Yeah, just as you would cut a bagel or a English muffin. So, and as I start to cut, I find it's filled with bean paste.
Stuff.
Yeah, sort of red bean goop, and I'm like, oh Christ!
Not an English muffin.
Yeah, which is a little bit of a caution is that almost any bread product in Korea that can be filled by a red bean paste will be filled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hot dog buns. Anything.
Oh,
they'll just
no.
pump it full of that red bean paste.
So what did you do on your holiday?
I hung out with some newly made friends at their place here in Seoul. So I'm still not sure exactly where it was. Somewhere south of the Han.
Okay.
And traveled around the city and found out, discovering more and more that there's nowhere the subway system in Seoul can't take you.
Oh, that's great, yeah. That's what I like to do on my holidays.
Nice.
I guess I mentioned last podcast I went hiking. But usually what I really like to do, my version of hiking, is I like to find two Starbucks that are not too far away. And then I figure out how to walk between those Starbucks. And then it's kind of good because you're on the ground and you're looking around and you see sort of funky things. And yeah, that's my version of
connect hiking. Connect the dots, right?
Yeah, walking from Starbucks to Starbucks. All right, and you went to a palace or something?
Yeah, I'm really horrible, still really horrible with Korean language and remembering the names of things, but it was...
Some are hard, yeah.
Yeah. It was beautiful. Beautiful.
It was the palace near City Hall, I would say.
Yeah. Which one is that?
Is that Tuxogum Palace or something?
That sounds familiar, but it would. It was fun. Mostly we just visited different areas of the city and...
Okay.
Figured out how to get there and shopped a little bit, and it was fun.
You know, what I like about those palaces, and you know, you've seen one palace, you've seen pretty much all of them. That's sort of the downside about the whole palace thing. It's like, all right, here we are, another palace, and another palace, and another palace.
Looks,
it's like you visit one palace.
It's so Asian.
Yeah. Yes. Visit one, Buddhist temple, and just that's it. You're covered.
Set. Yeah.
But if you go to a lot of those palaces, like especially the big one, Gyeongbokgung, which is kind of
I don't know, north of the American embassy. The Admiral Yusen Shin, the turtle ship admiral guy, there's a big statue of him near Sejong Center. And if you keep sort of walking north, and you go by the American embassy on your right, and then the palace is right there, huge. And you tour around that, and there's a lot of, like, plaques. And they're in Korean and English and Japanese. And if you read the English, a lot of times the English, it's sort of like, it says, well, you know, this building is a recreation of a building that stood here for, you know, 500 years and then was burned to the ground by the Japanese. And if you go on, and this pagoda is a creation of a pagoda that stood here for 300 years till it was burned to the ground by the Japanese. And I always wondered,
what does the Japanese version say?
Exactly. Yeah. Is the Japanese version quite as direct and, you know, bitter? I'm sure they have a reason to be bitter, but it's just kind of, you just wonder what.
Right.
What does the Japanese say?
And how do they balance their anger at the Japanese with their wish to, encourage Japanese tourism?
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's sort of like, Canada relies awful lot on American tourism, and although there's a sort of a bitter anti-Americanness in Canada, we sure don't want to show it.
Right.
So yeah, I love you, John.
Love you too, Carl. Actually, I've never been to Canada, so I'm not one of those people that.
Really?
Yeah. I lived next door to it for years.
Dude, you lived in Maine.
Just never got around to it.
Well, it's like America, but without guns and metric system.
I knew what that was like.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. There's rarely any good reason to go to Canada. Well, maybe fishing and hunting or something. Some people kind of appreciate that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then again, I was in Maine, hunting and fishing paradise. Not that I hunt or fish, but someday I'll get there.
Right, so our main topic is, sort of winning the hearts and minds of your Korean coworkers, or at least how not to make them hate you over much. Now, your school, John, you have a lot of foreign teachers. What's the ratio, foreign teachers to Korean teachers?
Probably 3-1.
Three foreign teachers for every Korean teacher.
Okay.
All right.
And that's just a rough guesstimate. But.
Okay. My school's a little different in that it's sort of one foreign teacher to all the rest. So I'm the only one there.
Okay.
But other schools, typically, you have your core of foreign teachers, but by and large, it's the Korean teachers.
Okay.
And most Hagwons just don't strictly teach English. They teach a lot of other courses, too. They'll teach math and science and art and Korean. They actually have a Korean course, they teach English in English.
Right.
In English school, they teach Korean in Korean school. And I guess other courses like history, stuff like that.
And this is all purely just to supplement
what they learn in
school so that they do better on their tests so that they
can go to Seoul National University and become successful and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah. And I guess the big fear here is in North America, it's like delivering pizzas or working McDonald's for the rest of your life, something like that. In Korea, they kind of like intimate operating a food cart in the street, like selling tteokbokki or something like that. Do you want that to be your future? One of those old women out on the street selling tteokbokki,
Pretty good threat.
Yeah, I guess so. Then, of course, I've also heard stories that those people make a lot of money. They do quite well for themselves.
Location,
no taxes, no... No overhead, they're just out there. Yeah. But then, conversely, it might be kind of an urban legend. I don't know about your city. Do you ever have a city where there's like a bag guy or a bag lady, some guy pushing all his worldly possessions in a shopping cart?
Just the one or several?
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's a bit rarer in Canada, but...
Where do they go in winter?
Yeah, that
is the Canada problem in Canada. Yeah, I've been in cities where they
die off.
Weather.
It's only the hardy ones,
right? Only the strong survive. I've lived in several cities where there was quite a homeless problem.
All right, but there's always sort of an urban legend, possibly in smaller cities and towns, about the bag lady or the man pushing his shopping cart around, that in fact that he is rich. trees.
Oh, right.
Yeah, have you heard
right.
these legends? They're like, they just,
they're
just rich.
They're
crazy. But they're crazy. Right. Yeah. Right. So I always thought that was kind of just something we tell ourselves to not...
So that we don't have to feel really bad about the man pushing his life around in the shopping cart.
Exactly, right. Yeah. So I just wonder if the Dukboki ladies are being actually well-to-do is so much of a similar urban legend. Anyway, so...
survey.
Yeah, but on the topic of misery, is the poor Korean teachers. And I've heard various stories. I mean, I've never actually gone straight to my co-teachers and like, how much money do you make? But they are reputed to make considerably less than we're
making. Considerably less.
Yeah.
And more being expected of them.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah. I remember once my boss complaining about one of the math teachers who was sort of dating the one of the co-owners, that she was making like, you know, 1.7 million won a month, and how incredibly high that was.
Wow.
Yeah. And now, I guess, you know, to reiterate, your foreign teachers usually make about at least two. You were sort of commenting about 2.3 years.
Yeah, it looks like... Not long ago, it looked like two.
Yeah.
2 million seemed to be about the average norm, but it looks like that's gone up to about 2.2, 2.3.
Yeah. So if you think for a Korean teacher who's, you know, 1.7 is considered, you know, geez, you got to be sleeping with the owner to make that.
And probably having been sleeping with the owner for quite a while, yeah. And teaching at the school for quite a while, yeah. And that yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So, and as John said, that these people aren't sort of working your hours. They're there a couple hours before you get in, and they're there a couple hours after you leave. A lot of times they have the responsibility. They have to call the parents and,
right.
You know, the mothers and tell right. them, oh, your kid did this today, your kid did that today. The mothers are very, very hands-on here because they don't work, and so their kids are their primary focus of their life, and they just are total... micromanagers of everything. So, so the teachers always have to call the mothers, and so they work extremely hard. They get paid considerably less than you get paid, and then they don't have the perks like the free apartment and a lot of the hand holding and that kind of stuff. So
it's not a stretch to understand that there might be some resentment.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of, you know, backbiting and that sort of stuff.
Right.
Have you felt any of that?
I have not personally, that I'm aware of, suffered any backbiting, but I have seen it in play with some other teachers.
Okay.
That has affected them some.
My sort of theory to sort of avoid that is humility is the first...
Right.
The first line of defense is don't strut around and bow to everybody, you know, sort of, and it doesn't matter if you're doing kind of good bow. What's important is to kind of be a bit of a, being befuddled can get you through so many situations.
Right.
The
right.
befuddled foreigner can just sort of smooth over so much and not just make people not, you know, hate you less, but they come to like you because... Again, they can in some ways see themselves in your situation, but living in North America
right.
or something. And if you just act incredibly confused and, for the love of God, can you help me? then they begin to have a certain sympathy for you. So.
I don't know if this is the norm in other schools or in Korea or not, but many of the Korean staff where I work have lived in...
Yeah.
North America
yeah.
or Australia
yeah.
or for a period of, you know, a year or 3 years or whatever. So
they will have a built-in sympathy for
yeah,
you.
Yeah,
yeah. As long as you have a built-in sympathy for them.
Right.
So, yeah. And typically, too, you know, what I call the whitey wrangler, the person who's put in charge of you, showing you how to, like, you know, open up your bank account and set up your internet connection. And they really have to do a lot of things. And odds are they're not getting paid extra for it. So,
right.
So whenever somebody does one of those little jobs for you, even though it's their job, just thank them profusely. And
every once in a while, even maybe buy them a little something.
Yeah, that was my other point, is especially bring some stuff from your home nation, mm-hmm. little gifts, and you know, keep them in your apartment, and then just, you know, give that to the person whenever they help you with something. And again, that just can really, really raise your standards.
Right.
Because they've probably dealt with foreigners before, and they've probably had the arrogant snooty.
Yeah, no doubt. They've had bad experiences.
Exactly. And if you just sort of come in and you're just like very thankful and just thanking them for doing their job, they will respond and things like that. Yeah. The other thing too is what I sort of find is just, you know, the street food, like, you know, the hot duck we bought or stuff like that. There's hot duck and there's this other thing called banana bread, and these weird little sort of eggs encased in fried goop, and well, just there's a whole range.
You make
of street
it sound
food.
So good.
Yeah, for a lot of Koreans, these are also actually comfort foods. You know,
I'm sure.
Yeah, that they would have had when they were students and stuff like that. So. And it's not expensive either. That street food, it's,
no.
You know. So
yeah,
like,
I'm
you know,
that.
Yeah, $3 you can feed an office.
Right.
So a lot of times it's kind of fun. Just go to right before class. Just go to one of the street carts. You know, buy enough for your co-teachers, your Korean co-teachers, and bring it in. And again, just act befuddled. Like, I don't know what this is. It looked kind of delicious. Please have it. Explain it to me.
Right. Tell me all about it.
Exactly. And they'll like that. And it doesn't take a lot, but. Just little, just, you know, be polite, and it will pay off in spades. Well, I mean, it may not really pay off, but...
But not doing it.
Yeah.
In a controlled... If we could do a controlled experiment and have one person do it and the other person not, then the person who did it would see how it paid off.
Yeah. But you know, it just will make for a better work environment.
Yeah.
When I worked in software, I always had the theory that... What?
Nothing good. No, please go ahead.
When I worked in software, I'm just wondering if this is like one of those, like, I ever tell you kids about the 60s?
No. Go ahead, please.
Right. That the two most important people at a company, or it's a tree, like they are the most important, is the network guy. Treat him like he's the most important person at the company, and the receptionist, treat her like she's the most important person at the company. One, because, you know, the network guy, because eventually you're going to need his help.
Right.
And, you know, if...
No matter how big a jerk he
absolutely,
is.
Absolutely, yeah.
They almost always are, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, just wanted to check.
Exactly. But if you have the network guy kind of on your side, it's amazing, you know, the response times when you have problems and how good your computer starts running. Because a lot of times a network guy's got, like, more additional memory in his drawer nobody knows about.
Right.
And like, you know, hey, Carl, you want me to double your RAM? Sure, okay.
Well, if you really feel like you want to.
Yeah, so, and the receptionist, because...
Right.
If you can treat sort of the lowest person as the most important, that sort of... The goodness filters from the bottom up,
right?
You know? And that's one thing. Another thing, too, is, especially if the receptionist is attractive, everybody stops and talks to her at some point in the day.
Right.
The president on down. So if you've got her sort of going to the president, that Carl's a really nice guy, you know, something along those lines. You know, he always helps me whenever I lose my files or I can't figure out how to save a Word file. And it
These
helps.
Things trickle out.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I guess that's my other point, too, is it just create a much nicer work environment by being kind and respectful and generous to your coworkers, Korean or otherwise.
I hate myself and I want to die. English t-shirt finds.
English t-shirt finds. Today, I guess we're going to cover sort of strange names for restaurants, and even, I guess, kind of the odd Korean interpretations of Western foods.
Right.
Pizza's a strange one. Have you tried pizza here, John?
I have not tried pizza here, but that's only because I'm still recovering from pizza 20 years ago in Japan.
Well, what happened?
They put things like corn and well, pineapple, but they do that in the States, too, which is...
Yeah, but not the corn, bottom. Yeah.
Not the corn, right.
Yeah.
Corn and green beans and just things that don't go on pizza.
Yeah, that's the state of pizza in Korea.
Okay.
Corn is a big one.
Oh, yeah. No, stop it.
Sometimes you'll do, like, a little role-playing thing with your kids, like, you know, order a pizza. Try to order a pizza in English. And so it's like, you know, what do you want on your pizza? You know, you do a bad Italian accent. You know, I'm Luigi, what do you want on your pizza? And cornuto. Does that word exist in Greece?
I don't think so.
Cornuto. Cornuto. That is the greatest Italian swear word.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, yeah. English, you need like a paragraph to explain what the Italians sort of concentrate in one little word. To call somebody a cornuto is an incredible insult. It means you're a married man and your wife is cheating on you. And everybody in the village knows about it except you. You're too stupid to know, so you are a cornuto.
Nice. Greek has its version of that word.
I would imagine, yeah. So when ordering pizza, the kids say strange things like, you know, oh, I want corn and potato on my pizza.
Oh.
Yeah. But I guess, well, they don't mean potato, they mean sweet potato.
Oh, well, that makes a world of difference.
So sweet potato is really popular here for all kinds of things.
Right,
like,
right.
Kids eat it as a snack. They buy it sort of hot from one of the food carts, and they just sort of eat it as a snack. Yeah.
Of course, there's also the version of sweet potatoes that I've seen here that is just actual regular old potatoes covered in corn syrup.
Oh, yeah.
Which is...
You see some of those at the food booths and stuff.
Oh.
I've not tried that.
Yeah.
But, so the pizza toppings can be kind of strange. And then, and I have no idea how this developed, but as a side, you get pickles on the side, sweet pickles on the side, which, have you been to Italy in all your travels?
I have.
Did they serve pickles?
Didn't notice pickles being served as a pizza side.
Yeah.
And if... Now, I'm really rather tired of the sweet pickle now that I've been here in Korea. And I didn't used to really mind sweet pickles, but since that's the only kind I seem to find here, I'm over them.
Yeah.
I long for a dill pickle.
Yeah. So I don't know how the pickles became associated with pizza, but one thing I noticed, almost nobody ever actually eats the pickles. It's kind of just, you know...
A garnish.
Garnish, yeah. I remember once one of my students, we had... pizza, and one of my students is just like, oh, teacher, pickles, no, and I'm eating the pickles, and the kids are like, why? And I'm just it's white people kimchi, you know?
Right? Yeah, it's
white people kimchi.
That's a good one.
But one of the strange restaurants, actually, keeping on the subject of Italian food, is in an area called Jongno, and I saw a sign for something called an Italian Viking restaurant.
I guess the Vikings made a couple of inroads into Italy.
So?
Yeah, they did.
I don't know. I'm trying to think, what could Italian Viking food be?
So what would Viking food be?
Viking food would be, I don't know.
Fish?
Mutton or something?
Salted fish?
Maybe. But I just sort of see guys in little helmets with horns and they're...
saying things like Luigi.
I don't know, yeah.
Yes.
Cornuto. Anyway, so yeah. But, I really wanted to take a picture of it because it was too bizarre. But when I went back a week later, it was gone.
Huh.
Yeah, which leads me to believe that I guess maybe somebody heavily invested in an Italian Viking restaurant. And then, you know, they opened up and they got their little... You know, their little hot table out with all the food, and it's empty, and the owner is, like, looking at the chef and going, where's the food? And the chef is like, there actually is no Italian Viking.
I couldn't find any.
Yeah.
Right.
We're doomed.
Just probably one of those things where people from a non-English-speaking culture saw two words that sounded good together and put them together without realizing that they don't, in fact, go together.
I am suspect that maybe word smorgasbord, maybe they've got confused a bit.
Right.
I don't know.
Right, could be. Good thinking.
Wow. And, plays on the word cafeteria is also big here. Mm. There's a restaurant called Loteria.
Right.
Sort of a branch of the Lotte Corporation, Lotte Chable, Loteria, and then there's another restaurant called Spaghettiteria.
Okay.
Yeah, which I don't know. The cafeteria is not really necessarily
doesn't need to be stretched that far.
Yeah, it's not really a sort of, as you say, resonates. It doesn't resonate particularly well, like commentary. So, John, have you been to a Loteria?
I have looked up into one from across the street at the McDonald's, but I haven't yet been into one.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, Loteria is kind of like really the Korean version of McDonald's. There are McDonald's here.
Right.
Yeah, but Loteria, a sort of branch of the Lotte chamber. Loteria is actually, I like it because it's cheap and the food is, you know, bad and greasy and all those
everything we go to fast food for.
Yeah, all those good things. But another interesting thing about Loteria is they have like the most highly developed recycling system. When you throw your garbage out, you just don't sort of throw it all away.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of the fast food restaurants here and Starbucks and things are quite good in that they require you to sort of break everything down.
Right.
And to sort of...
Still not always sure what I'm doing, but I work at it.
Yeah. Sometimes where to put what is a little confusing, and Loteria is probably the worst for that because there's about four different hoppers, and you're never really sure where to put what. And a lot of times I find that if you sort of you walk up to the garbage, you know, with your tray, and there's a Loteria employee sort of standing near the garbage, they just grab the tray from you.
Nice.
You know, it's like, and they do it all themselves because it's just like you'll mess it up.
And they're right. We will.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. The other weird thing too is. Happy price. The term happy price is kind of prevalent, especially at Loteria. I noticed I would order things and randomly I would get something free, like crab sticks or cheese sticks or something. And I could never quite figure out, well, why am I getting something free? And a couple weeks later, I'm not getting something free. What's going on? And then, you know, my friend sort of pointed out, it's happy price. If you buy a certain
combination, setta.
Then sometimes they have little specials where you get something free. Happy price. Yeah. But I was thinking, well, why does happy price sound so dorky? You know, like, what is it about happy price? And I thought, well, I guess maybe it's because McDonald's kind of has a lock on that term happy. I mean, like the happy meal.
Right.
And so we've long associated the word happy meal, kids meal. So it sounds kind of childish when you sort of try to use happy for things. There was another restaurant. I got a picture of this. It's called the Pork Fusion Club.
Pork Fusion.
Yeah, Pork Fusion Club. There is something called fusion cuisine here.
Surely.
Have you had this fusion?
Not here, no.
In the West, fusion means like mixing Western tastes with Asian tastes and stuff like that. So Seattle is big in the fusion cuisine, sort of taking like... Well, actually, Seattle was sort of lame in that. It was sort of like just take salmon and then cover it in teriyaki sauce or something like that. And that was like fusion.
Fusion, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But I guess it's as lame in Korea, where what they do is they kind of take like Italian food, so like spaghetti, and then they add like gochujang, you know, sort of a Korean pepper sauce, and throw a bunch of clams in it, and that is fusion. That's fusion cuisine.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's not always, it's not really tasty.
Speaking of Korean hot, and maybe it's just because I haven't grazed widely in the various, in the varieties of hot in Korea, but the only variety I've really met in Korea as far as hot sauce or hot food is, it's just hot. There's no subtlety to the hot. It's just hot. It's not like jalapeno is hot than habanero is different hot than...
Uh-huh.
It's just a pretty straightforward hotness that doesn't do much for me.
My theory there is... I think Mike Myers had a joke about sort of Scottish food is the only food, the only cuisine ever based on a dare. Like, haggis, I dare you to eat that.
Right.
Whereas I think Korean food is like the only cuisine based on sort of, you know, machismo or something. You probably know more about this than I do, and I think it's purely urban legend. Have you ever had Retsina?
Yeah.
It's a Greek wine that tastes like like
it has a pine.
Yeah, a little pine taste.
Yeah,
you know,
you can clean
your floor with it, kind of.
Age it or whatever in
fresh pine barrels,
yeah. Freshly cut, still resinous pine barrels.
Well, the urban legend I heard was that when the Romans invaded Greece, the Romans were very concerned about their wine industry. They didn't want the Greek wine industry to compete. So they passed legislation that said Greek wine had to have so much pine tar added to the wine. And in the view of the Romans, this would make Greek wine undrinkable. But the Greeks, being very stubborn people, just drank their own wine anyways. And what started off as, you know, not very good, the Greeks just came to prefer pine tar in their wine.
That's, as urban legends go, that's a good one. It sounds good. It touches on all the major points that it could and resonates with a lot of what we know about Greeks and Romans and whatnot.
Yeah. So my theory then is that, you know, Korean cuisine is based a lot on Chinese cuisine and Japanese cuisine. And so what the Koreans just did is they just made it hotter, kind of like, especially with the Japanese. Japanese traditionally don't really like spicy food. They like very mild, non-offensive, non-invasive foods. And so the Koreans just sort of added a lot of chili. And it's like, ha-ha. we'll eat your food, but we'll make it so spicy you won't recognize it.
I've heard a lot of, before I got here, it sure is hot. Korean food sure is hot. And yeah, there's some hot Korean food, but I haven't tasted anything that made my hair on fire or anything.
Well, what you want to actually
but
try...
I grew up in Southern California.
Okay. So. Mexican food?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, right, yes. Hence all those strange Mexican references
right.
you were making that I was kind of like just pretending I knew what you were talking about.
Oh.
I don't know. Did you say the word jalapeno?
Yeah, jalapeno.
Okay, I heard
habanero
that.
And...
Yeah, after that I lost you.
I'm not sure I remember what I said, so okay, let's go.
All right. Anyway, so, yeah. Well, but if you really want to try something spicy, it's called a bulldak. Bulldak. Bul meaning fire, and duck meaning chicken. So fire chicken. And now that's hot.
Is it?
Yeah, that's like, you know, have a bite, drink a glass of water. Have a bite, drink a glass of water. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. But in general, you know, nothing's too spicy. If you can handle Mexican food, Indian food, then you're not going to find most of Korean cuisine too spicy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then something that actually kind of occurred to me the other day, a couple of days ago, which is during the Chuseok holiday, I finally figured it out. There's a clothing store here called Who AU. And have you seen Who AU?
Who AU? No,
it,
I haven't.
It looks just like a A&F, Abercrombie Fitch.
It's actually on the train here today, I saw a man. I thought it was Whoa You.
Yeah. Well, it's a total clone. Like, you walk in, the same smells, the same clothing, the same kind of, beach boy kind of surfer dude. Actually, the one in Myeongdong actually has this curly blonde-haired Western surfer dude guy working there.
Okay.
Yeah. So, complete copy, except for the very strange, hard-to-read name, Who AU. And I'm like, well, AU, usually that's short for Australia.
Or gold.
Or what?
Or gold.
Oh, yeah, that's true, yeah. Who gold? Yeah. I don't know. But then I realized, say it, Who are you?
Who are you?
Who are you? Sort of like, who are you?
Okay.
Who are you?
Okay.
Who are you? I don't know.
Could be.
It took me 3 years to figure that one out.
But who are you?
Yeah.
Who are you?
In Korean news.
Or if you were laying bets this week for, or in the news segment, what would we be talking about? For in the news, sure, we're going to talk about the North Korean nuclear bomb thing.
Right.
Yeah. So you can collect that bet now. What were the Vegas bookmakers? What odds were they putting on that?
Oh, God.
Soul Survivors was going to be talking about the Korean nuclear bomb test.
1,000 to 1.
Really? Really?
Yeah,
they thought we were iconoclasts to the last. Like, you know, we're just going to talk about this actress's, you know, sex video or something like that. Right. We're not going to deal with that real issue.
Rain has a new album out, right?
Oh, really? But that will be, I think, an in the news topic, I think, when Rain conquers America.
Right.
Yeah, that'll be a good news topic.
That'll be after North Korea conquers South Korea.
Yeah. So the North Koreans, it looks now like they really did detonate some kind of nuclear device.
We'll see. I have theories about that. When it first transpired that America was having severe doubts about whether they did or not, I thought, why would... If America did have severe doubts, why would they talk about them? Hmm. What is there to gain by talking about, by saying, no, you didn't?
Yeah.
What would there have been to gain? And I think at some point, my theory is that at some point someone with a little intelligence thought, you know, that was stupid of us to go and say, no, you didn't, so let's just say we found some radiation in the air. And
really? Okay.
That's my theory.
Oh, okay. So you don't believe the radiation, or you're slightly skeptical about
it. I'm slightly skeptical. I still think that it was probably just, it could very well likely have been a bunch of dynamite.
Well, that's true. Of course, the Americans, they say that, you know, they've been watching the site with satellites and things like that. And if the North Koreans were really trying to just fool people with dynamite, you know, we're talking 500 tons of dynamite they'd have to move in. And that would be fairly hard to smuggle in, under these sort of eye-in-the-sky satellites. But again, you know, I mean, if you want to sort of spin it a bit conspiracy-wise, you know, should you really trust the word of the Bush government on?
Right.
You know? Right. I guess we've sort of seen what a mistake that is.
Right.
But yeah, but if you do believe what they say, then that makes sense, that it would be kind of hard to smuggle in 500 tons of TNT to kind of fool people. The story is that they're trying to set off a larger device. Because I guess, you know, Pakistan and India, when they set off a nuclear device, you want to set off a nuclear device in such a way that you can tell people, we really have a good grasp on this nuclear stuff. And
make a statement.
Yeah. And that, you know, this shock wave you're measuring is definitely a nuclear bomb. And, you know, so you want to typically set off a much bigger blast, 20 kilotons versus, you know, half a kiloton or something. So... what's your sort of take on sort of the South Korean, you know, the man in the street kind of thing? Are they worried about it?
I have not noticed any worry. The couple of teachers I talked to this week on the day, I guess Monday, was Monday the day they set it off?
Something like that. Right after the holiday.
She was saying, you know, another day.
Yeah.
You know,
which probably maybe surprises some people in North America, that that's sort of the rather blasé attitude of the South Koreans. Like, you know, ooh, there's this madman north of you with these nuclear bombs. Aren't you worried? You know.
Well, I would guess that on some level, yeah, of course they are. But you can't maintain that level of worry 24/7 for years and years and years on end. You live with it for years and years and years on end, and you become accustomed to it.
My impression is that South Koreans are, the two things they're actually worried about is, one, the sort of the international embarrassment this is kind of causing. Mm-hmm. I know when George Bush was like, you know, axis of evil, North Korea,
a
lot of Korean Americans were kind of like, oh God, you know, like,
this is not helpful.
We're South Korean, but not, you know, middle America doesn't always make this fine distinction between North and South Koreans. Just, you one of them, they're Koreans.
Right.
There was a bit of a worry, I think, in the Korean American community that, you know, all Koreans would be painted with the same brush.
Really?
Because they had kind of seen it with, like, you know, Muslims after 9/11.
Sure.
So that kind of thing. So I think they were a little bit worried. So sure, there's a little bit of embarrassment. And also, the only actual worry is kind of like, you know, like the radiation. Are we going to... Is the radiation? Is the radiation going to kill us? You know, and Koreans seem to be sometimes get a little worried about product contamination and, you know, health issues kind of thing. So that seems to be much more of a worry. Now, have you ever had your children, like, you know, draw Korea or something? Have you ever had them draw Korea?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Now, when I have my children draw Korea, they draw the entire Korean peninsula.
Okay.
Yeah, which is it's almost a bit like asking a Canadian child, like, draw Canada, and he draws all of North America, right? There's North Korea, there's South Korea, but you know, they sort of draw them together. And I sort of realized that the South Koreans don't really see the North as being another country. It's Korea, this is Korea. The Korean Peninsula is Korea. And, you know, just these kind of crazy people north, you know, we can't go there, but there's places we don't go and we don't want to go. And it's just, you know.
But it's still very much in their consciousness that Korea is Korea.
Yeah, Korea is Korea. That, you know, that there's just this arbitrary dividing line that nobody really recognizes. And so, yeah. So when I would draw, like, on the blackboard, I draw South Korea. You know, the kids would, like, look, like, well, what is that? You know, what are you drawing? I'm like, well, it's South Korea. Well, can you draw better South Korea? You know, but they would actually draw all of Korea. So I started trying to improve my drawing of the Korean Peninsula. At first, I would just sort of draw it like Florida, but kind of mirrored, you know, sort of.
Right.
You know, Florida that hangs the other way.
Right.
Yeah. And they would not have any, that still didn't help them. So remember, so one time then I sort of drew in Japan to sort of show, you know, Korea, Japan. But once you put Japan on the blackboard, the howls of protest, teacher, no!
So we need a different point of reference.
Yeah. So the only way I could kind of quiet them down is I drew a turtle ship next to Japan, and then like a mushroom cloud over Tokyo, and like
that pacifies them a little, doesn't it?
This nuclear turtle ship is blowing up Tokyo. Oh, good teacher. Sometimes you gotta play to your audience.
Right,
you know?
right.
So you begin to eventually learn to draw Korea a little bit better. Not just, I think even when I would draw South Korea, I just would kind of draw like a bumpy rectangle. That was my South Korea.
Well, that seems like it should work.
Well, one time on the blackboard, I drew a Korean kite. And Korean kite is basically a rectangle with a hole in the middle. So I drew a rectangle with a hole in the middle on the blackboard. And the kids again start howling, "Teacher, no! No, teacher!" And I'm like, well, what? I'm just drawing a Korean kite. And they're like, "No, that is not a Korean kite. That is the flag of Japan."
Oh.
And I'm like, okay, yeah, I guess it's a rectangle, hole in the middle. Sorry, fine. So the kids, one of the kids, I'm like, well, you draw a Korean kite then. So the kid goes up to the blackboard and draws a rectangle, but this time not sort of horizontal, but vertical,
okay.
And then in the middle draws a hole.
Okay. Well, so, yes, yeah. That's different.
Yeah. So a horizontal rectangle with a hole is a Japanese flag, but a vertical rectangle with a hole is a Korean kite.
Okay. How, when they're flying the kite, how is it oriented?
It's too far up there.
I don't know. Well, we'll have to look into that.
So yeah. So I guess, you know, I guess it's not really a huge issue here.
I mean, you know, I guess when I'm running it over in my head, you know, how frightened should I be? It's like, well, the chances, I think, that actual armed conflict will come are pretty slight.
Yeah.
I think the guy up north gets a lot of play out of being the crazy guy up north, but I don't think he's...
You be ill in me.
Right, Kim, John. You be in it. I don't think he's as crazy as he likes everyone to think he is. And I think he probably figures that in the end he can't win whatever he would start. So,
and too, when you think about sort of, you know, the Korean idea that Korea is one nation, North Koreans having nuclear weapons is a bit like, I don't know, it's like people in Florida getting worried that people in North Dakota have Minuteman missiles.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
You know, that in the Korean mind, it's, you know, that... You know, the North isn't going to attack the South because we're all one country, and Floridians aren't worried that North Dakotans are suddenly going to launch a nuclear strike on, you know, on Tampa.
A little naive, perhaps, in both cases, but...
This week's teaching opportunity.
All right, and our teaching opportunity of the week, we're going back to that guy who wants the ugly teachers. Rowan. If you remember from last week, this strange ad turned up on one of the job boards where a teacher or a recruiter was asking for ugly teachers. And at first I just sort of thought it was some disgruntled Hagwon owner sort of hacked into the system and posted some rambling diatribe. But it turned out it was just kind of like a little jokey title.
A gimmick. Something to catch your eye.
Yeah, get people to click on it. And again, it's sort of the guy kind of just wanted to, you know, if you're the type to be offended by this ad, then you're not the type of guy he wants to sort of place in a job. That kind of thing. All right, so this job that Rowan is advertising is in Bucheon, which is starting salary is 2 to 2.1 million. This is actually a January start. So if you're the kind of person who, you know, you want a job but you don't want to kind of leave tomorrow,
this would be this, one for
this,
you.
Yeah, this gives you a lot of opportunity to sort of get sort of your act together and cancel your phone and
give notice at your current job, things like that.
Yeah, so this is Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. or 1 to 8:30 p.m. I kind of like these schools that actually give you a choice.
I like
are you a morning person or a night person?
Right.
Yeah. Bucheon is actually, I believe, it's kind of midway between Incheon and Seoul. It's kind of where the Line 1 and the Incheon subway line cross. And there's a lot of nice restaurants and big theaters and shopping and stuff like that. And a Starbucks. That's important. He writes here, I have placed 6 teachers at the school and is one of my most trusted clients. I have personally visited the school and the staff is lovely. Actually, my best friend, whom I went to teacher's college, is the head teacher here. The area is in the west part of Seoul, close to the subways and buses, great area and lively staff. More for the teacher who wants to teach kindergarten and socialize a lot. All right, so... yeah, so I guess if you like sort of the younger kids, then again, that's a
gift.
Yeah,
not everyone does.
That's true because I mean the language level is obviously not very high,
right?
And when you're teaching kindergarten kids, I mean it's a lot of like singing songs and and showing them pictures and talking in a very high voice and stuff like that.
We get some at the English Village, and what I've the advantage among the advantages to teaching that young is that they adore you. You're just a god to them. There's a lot of just real instant gratification in that way. But they do require much more energy, just emotional energy.
That's
they require
true.
Much more.
It could be quite tiring. Yeah, they will. They'll hug you.
You're just a god.
Yeah, latch onto your leg and not let go.
Right.
I think the youngest I ever taught was 8-year-olds. There was these 2 girls, and one of the girls was kind of like this. She was like this Korean Ewok. She was just kind of small and pudgy and kind of hairy, but like really, really cute. And her name was Sonia, and the other girl's name was Melanie. Yeah, and initially that's all they could say. Like, you know, that we gave them English names, and the only thing they could say was, "My name is Sonia." Very good, you know. Apple. My name is Sonia. Yeah, it's good, Sonia. Okay, this is an apple. Dada, hey, apple. My name is Sonia. Yeah, so
right.
Kind of cute. Anyway, so there you are. But yeah, if you get a sort of a larger class and then you get like boys into the mix, then it becomes,
then it becomes a zoo.
Yeah, it can become a little bit of a zoo. But again, the cuteness factor can be the compensation.
Right.
All right, so Rowan, again, to email him, ezenglishrowan@gmail.com. So that's ezenglishrowan@gmail.com. And again, up on our website, I guess our blog, gokorea.livejournal.com, we'll have the details there.
Korean kids do the darndest things.
Korean kids do the darndest things. One of the things about the Korean educational system is that they're really segregated based on sex. It's either boys' schools and girls' schools.
Right.
And so they don't really, they don't interact during their day school. And the only time they kind of interact is when they come to Hagwon. Now they're in a class together. And you notice kind of a
self-imposed
segregation.
Yeah. If there are two tables in a classroom that you're in and your team, the class comes in, they, you know, the boys sit on this side and the girls sit on that side without any
but there's also
discussion.
There's also a universal rule which side the girls sit on, which side the boys sit on.
Facing the class from the blackboard, the girls are on the right,
yeah,
and the boys are on the left.
Yeah.
Almost always.
Yeah.
And I didn't notice that until one class, they, for whatever reasons of their own, however these things get decided, they were on, they had switched.
Ah.
The boys were on this side. It's like, wait a minute, something is wrong here.
Ah. That's a good observation, because I've been here 3 years, and I've never noticed that. I mean, I've noticed the boys sit on one side, the girls sit on the other side, but I've never actually noticed that they always sit on the same side, no matter what age, no matter what class. Yeah, that's a good observation. Wow. Yeah, I don't know what that is.
But I don't know what it is either.
But so the girls are to the right, on the right hand side of the teacher.
Right.
Right. So that was a Dexter side, and the boys are on the sinister side.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good. So the girls are to the right hand of God, as they should be. And the evil little boys are. Yeah. Maybe.
And the little boy, in my case, since I'm left handed and that is my stronger hand, the boys should be smarter than that. But no. Just kidding. We don't beat the children.
Much.
Well. No, yeah.
We get moved around a lot in my department. I don't know. It's one of those jobs, like, I'm going someplace in this company, but literally, you know.
Right.
They just keep moving my desk and invite me to follow.
Well, at least they invite you to follow.
Yeah. That's kind of more the story of my whole career. Every job I've ever been at, they move me around a lot. Anyway, so so they moved us to, like, this whole other building, and the building was rather poorly heated. It kind of had these wall heating units, which, and the heating units were sort of up on the ceiling, which heat doesn't really rise. Heat just moves from areas of hot to areas of cold.
Right.
And since it's colder in the atmosphere as you go up, heat tends to go that way.
Right.
But, you know, if it was hot at the top and you had some ice at the bottom, the heat would actually move down. But anyways, but for rule of thumb, heat rises. So when you're in a classroom, a cold classroom, and the heaters are up at the top of the ceiling,
it takes a little longer to heat than it would otherwise.
Yeah, it's not really making that a toasty warm classroom. So so I walk into class, and, you know, again, the boys are on one side,
right?
And the girls are on the other side. But the boys are on the side with the heater. The boys are all kind of huddled under the heater. And the girls, they're by the window where it's extra cold, and they're just, like, freezing. I mean, just, like, really cold, you know, visibly cold and in pain.
Blue lips,
yeah.
The whole thing.
Yeah. And so I offer the kid, the girls, I say, well, why don't you move closer to the heater? No, teacher.
No, teacher.
Boys are there. Yeah. So the girls will rather freeze
than sit near the boys. How old are they?
You know, they're like about 10 years old.
Okay.
Yeah.
That stands definitely to reason. One of the things that I notice is that separation of boys and girls, even it carries through even when they're 13, 14, even when they're in their early teens.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Which isn't how things were when I was younger.
But I'm thinking that this separation is, I begin to think it's not a cultural thing. It's like just some Korean physics, you know. Is that sort of that same physics that sort of, like, you know, that in Korea, solid bodies are really a gas. And they can just pass through each other. And then this explains why when subway doors open, everybody's trying to get on the subway,
right,
at the same time everybody's trying to get off the subway,
right.
You know, because it's in Korea, they just understand solid bodies as being a gas, you know, they pass through each other, they don't just sort of bump into each other and cell phones go spilling out and stuff like that.
No.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking that, you know, if It's like, so like magnets, right? You know, as you bring the north and south poles together, they repulse.
Right.
So I think to myself, you know, we could make trains, right? And put girls Powered. Along the tracks and then put boys under the train carriage.
Right.
And man, that would just boom.
Quick. Yeah. I bet it would be.
If we could harness that.
Let's work on it.
Yeah. So,
any scientists?
Oh, I know scientists, baby.
Excellent.
But none that, well, you know.
None that would be willing to
admit their former German citizenship, you know what I'm saying? No, I've always been an Argentinian. What are you talking about?
Of course you have.
Yeah. I know a couple of those. Well, I am half German, so.
Yeah, well.
Where do these ideas come from? I don't know. Must be my French side. But yeah, so and two is when you get sort of the older children, and now they're kind of like, they're at that age where they're kind of noticing each other.
Right.
But I mean, I think when I've always been attracted to, you know, the opposite sex as a child. You know, I think hormones begin to make it much more
right.
Really force the issue. So so the boys are always so ham-fisted in their attempts to, you know, win the heart of the girl they're interested in. Partially, I think, because, again, you know, they're separated by sex in the school system.
Yeah, so they haven't done a lot of socializing.
Yeah, rico suave, they're not, you know. So there's this one boy, and he liked this one girl, Amy. I think his name was John. John liked Amy. You could tell, you know, how much John liked Amy. And I could always remember her name, Amy, because John was always chasing Amy. I always ask the children, how are you? So, Amy, how are you? And John says, her name's not Amy. I'm like, well, what is her name? Her name is Chickenhead. So to him, this was kind of like, this is
a courting ritual.
Yeah, this is
nice.
How he got her attention. And so clearly the boys, you know, they just understand that they want the girl's attention. And so they use, you know, the most parsimonious method of getting the girl's attention, which is, you know, insulting her. So,
right.
So it sure does get her attention, but
sure,
not the attention
you want.
It may take
her a while to bring her around, though.
Yeah.
But the girl, I guess they eventually do.
Well, yeah. Well, Korea does have an extremely low birth ratio, like 1.2 children for every woman. So
okay, so
I don't know. This might
they're not always bringing them around, I guess.
Yeah, I think the Korean mating rituals are actually there's a little something missing there. Even if you can't, you know, harness these children for, you know, public transportation, you can actually that antipathy that exists here between boys and girls, you can usually harness it for discipline purposes.
Right.
Just sort of, you know,
I'll make you go on that team.
Exactly. A bad boy or bad girl, like, I will make you sit with the girls, you know, that kind of thing. And that, you know, oh my God. I think
that's worse than making them stand outside.
Yeah, but I don't ever do that because it would punish the girls unduly. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you know, the lot in life of a Korean female is hard enough. I don't want to necessarily make it harder for them.
Right. But it's a good threat.
All right, so that's our show. I guess at the top of the show, I didn't announce our email address or anything like that.
Oh, I don't think we did.
Yeah, I was just so happy to have you back, John. I kind of just completely lost all that.
Well,
sort of
I have that effect on people sometimes.
Oh, yeah. So, I guess online, you can reach us online through email at gokorea@gmail.com. Please send your email questions. Last week I just basically covered a lot of email questions, and that was pretty fun. Most of the emails were for Sarah. Sarah's quite popular in email.
Well,
yeah, you know,
she's quite popular anyway.
Yeah, she's a very nice woman, and I think too a lot of her listenership is women listeners, and I think they kind of, you know, idolize Sarah. She's sort of doing the, you know, kind of that thing maybe they want to do. So yeah, so Sarah's our resident hero, and she'll be back next week, don't you worry. And so email your questions to gokorea@gmail.com, and online at www.gokorea.info. I think in another section I gave our blog, But you can just go to www.gokorea.info, and then you'll see a link there for our blog or journal. I just realized everything, we have Go Korea for everything in very different permutations. There's the blog Go Korea, there's a website Go Korea, and then there's a Gmail Go Korea. And maybe it was just confusing listeners, I thought. So I just thought maybe giving the email and the .info site is sort of
good.
Because from there you can launch to the actual blog.
Get you anywhere you need to go.
But the blog is where the most action is, kind of thing. A lot of pictures and things we talk about on the show sort of go up there.
So be sure to have it up while you're listening.
Yeah. And, I guess another thing I added to the actual www.gokorea.info site is I did a little sort of dictionary. So a lot of the terms we use on the show, like ajumma and darahe and things like that, you can find that stuff online or on our webpage. Clear those things up. All right. So have you been to our website, John? We actually have to sort of fill in some of your biographical data.
I haven't been there recently.
Okay. I just sort of, for John has a degree.
Oh, yes, I do. In liberal studies, actually.
But liberal studies. B.A.?
Liberal studies.
Okay, B.A. in liberal studies. Which university?
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. That's my feeling, too. It's like, where did I go?
Where was that again?
There was some Ivy. I remember the Ivy.
Excelsior College. It's in New York.
I went to the University of Windsor, so I should not laugh at you.
Okay. No, it's easy. It's all right.
Excelsior. Whose motto was that?
I don't... the guy that
Knights
played
the... Round
the
Table, or...?
Ever Upward. Is that, does that mean something like that? Upward, I think so. Upward, non-word, something like that.
I think they parried it on the
word Excelsior always reminds me of the movie The Bad Seed.
Really?
Because it's the word that for that packing straw stuff, and that's what the little bad girl burnt.
I never saw that movie.
You never saw The Bad Seed?
I
oh, my God. Well, that's another subject, then.
Okay. I guess about children being bad?
It was a little horrible, rotten, evil child in it that had everyone snowed into thinking that she was a sweet little darling.
Something else I will leave then for when I return to Canada eventually.
Yeah.
I buy a lot of Korean DVDs, but I don't watch them here. Idea is just to, I'm living Korea, so why watch it in movies?
Sorry.
But when I return back to North America, then
you'll
want
something.
Exactly. Then I will watch those and go, I remember that GS25. That's like 7-Eleven.
Right.
Korea.
Ooh, which is also here, too.
Yeah, there's something that's going up on the dictionary. GS25.
GS25. Yeah.
All right. So that's our podcast number 6.
We'll see you next week.
Yeah. John, numerologically, did I say that right?
Close enough.
Yeah, number goofiness, number 6, does that mean anything?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, all right, 6.
Well, it's the man of man, the number of man, according to all the biblical stuff.
Oh, yeah, right, 666, I guess, right. is a big, there's various explanations for 666. The best one I've heard is that if you take... basically all the Roman numerals. 666 is all of the Roman numerals, basically, used in 666 uses all of the Roman numerals in existence. And since Rome was...
The America of its day.
Exactly. Yeah. The idea is that, Mark of the Beast, 666, you could not engage in commerce. So in other words, if you weren't going to use the Roman numeral system, you couldn't really engage in commerce. And that was one of the ideas what 666 is actually code for. It makes a lot of sense. I'll throw that up on our journal page, too, because I'm not explaining it right. I'm a little bit distracted by the loudest people in Korea have just come sat next to us. During the Hoduk topic? No, the Loteria topic. We actually kind of picked up and moved because another...
We were invaded.
Yeah, another loud bunch. Yeah. All right. So, enjoy. Bye-bye.
See you next week.